Good morning. Thank you for listening to STEM Connections Podcast. Our podcasts are all based around the central theme of what it takes to be successful. My name is Ethan.
My name is Liam.
My name is Daniel.
My name is Miguel.
My name is Patrick.
My name is Zev.
My name is Megan.
My name is Sierra.
And my name is Lauren.
Today, we have the honor of speaking with Representative Fishbein, who is a state representative in Connecticut. Thank you, Mr. Fishbein, for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us today.
Well, thank you for having me wake up this early and meet with all of you.
Same. All right. Now, our first question will be brought to us by Liam.
Hi. Can you tell us a little bit about your position?
In the state capitol, we are part of the legislative branch of the government. So legislative branch, you know, there's three portions of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. And the legislative branch, basically their job is to review statutes, recommend modifications to those, ultimately pass a budget, and deal with constituent issues. So somebody who lives in my district has a problem that the state can perhaps help out with. That's something that I help them with. I also sit on the town council here in Wallingford. So in that position, very similar, but more centralized, and it's unique to have both positions, but I enjoy it.
Now we will start on some questions about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? Well, I was born in Queens, New York, and my family was from here. My father was in law school. And we moved here when I was about 3 years old. So basically, I grew up in Wallingford.
What was your childhood like?
Oh, geez. I'm basically a shy person. It's difficult for me to come out of my shell. What you see here is interesting in that aspect. In high school, and even in junior high school, I never stepped foot in the cafeteria because I couldn't deal with the crowd. My parents got divorced when I was 13, which had a dramatic effect on my life, which is weird because I'm a lawyer also. So I do a lot of divorces, and one of my concerns is how are the children doing. So my childhood was not great. Even when I went to college, I went to high school. I went to Xavier my first year because I was told I had to go to Xavier, and I rebelled, and I got thrown out of Xavier. I ended up going to Sheehan, where I had basically a D average. And when I went to college the first time, I spent a lot of time there, but I didn't get a lot of credit. I think I was at Southern for 3 years, and I left there with about a semester's worth of credits, and then took about 10 years off and went back to school. So, not what you wanted to hear, but that's the truth.
Who was your biggest inspiration when growing up?
Oh, God. My biggest inspiration growing up. I don't know, I was very into music. I'm a metalhead, you know. So, you know, Judas Priest, Kiss, Iron Maiden, that kind of stuff, which I still listen to. There you go, right? So I was going to say Gene Simmons and Kiss, but I don't know, that was a great influence. Loved hockey growing up. I still play ice hockey. I don't know that I can answer that question. Who was my biggest influence? Because I was just trying to find my place growing up. So,
As a kid, what did you want to do when you grew up? Why?
What did I wanted to be a rock star. But you have to disseminate between when do you stop being a kid? Because I still want to be a rock star, right? So I'm 53 years old, and but I guess growing up, I wanted to be a rock star. So
in high school and college.
And I couldn't play an instrument until I was almost in college. I started playing guitar a lot, but it was so bad that my brother and I've got two brothers and a sister. we would lip sync before lip syncing was really, and we would have brooms, and those are the guitars, and we would like perform for my parents. You know, I remember like the Pretenders, Brass in Pocket, which you probably never even heard. You know, we'd lip sync to that. You know, and you know, stuff like that. So anyway.
Now we'd like to talk about your education and early career. Did you enjoy school?
I do enjoy school. I guess I didn't enjoy school when I was supposed to go to school. But I, you know, as I mentioned before, I didn't do well when I went to college. And then I left. Actually, they said, you're not going to pass. And I went and worked in the real world. And then when I went back to school, because I was paying for it myself, I really enjoy learning. I really enjoy, I mean, I read all the time, and I alternate fiction and nonfiction. I try and learn all the time. So I really do enjoy school. If I wasn't so busy, I'd be in school, if that answers your question.
When you were in school, what was your favorite subject?
Oh, when I was little, geography. You know, I was the nerd. I'm still the nerd. You know, I was the one who had all the answers on the flashcards. I don't know if you guys use flashcards, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you just saw the drawing of the country or whatever, and what was the capital? I knew all of that. They'd all come to me. What's the capital of, you know, Mongolia? So geography, history. I hated math because I'm a little dyslexic, which, you know, back then they couldn't diagnose it. They didn't know what it was, so I see numbers backwards sometimes. So definitely wasn't math, but geography and history. Yeah.
Where did you attend college?
Well, the first time I attended Southern, that was about 1983, 1984. As I said, I was there for about 3 years and left there with about a semester's worth of credits. And then in 1994, when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, I was motivated to do something with my life, and I went to Quinnipiac.
What did you major in?
Originally, when I went to Southern, it was political science. And then when I went to Quinnipiac, it was business studies with a concentration in marketing.
What was your first job outside of college?
I worked in retail. I worked at Caldor. Actually, when I was in high school, I worked at Caldor, which used to be up in the hill where Kohl's is now. And I was in the photo department. My family, when my parents got divorced, my mother started a photo lab. She had a dark room, and she would process people's film. And I learned a lot about that, cameras, developing things. And, you know, as a 16-year-old child at Caldor, everybody would come to me about, you know, well, what kind of developer do I get for this, you know, and Dektol and Fixer and Stop Bath and all that stuff. And, you know, and I would teach people about shutter speeds and f-stops on cameras, which you guys probably don't even know what I'm talking about. But, you know, people would come to me to learn about cameras, and I would sell them cameras at Caldor. So that was my first job. First job in general, my first job I've always worked since I was 16. My first job out of college was once again retail. When I decided to go back to school and go to Quinnipiac, I was married, I had a mortgage, I had to pay the bills. So I worked full-time and I went to school full-time. My wife took on a second job to try and help out, but I worked in retail. And then I was working at Bradley's and then BJ's Wholesale Club. I actually, at BJ's, I was running the overnight crew in Fairfield. So I was living here in Wallingford. I leave here about 9 o'clock at night, get to Fairfield BJ's about 10 p.m., run that crew, get out of there at 9 o'clock the next morning, and then go to school, try and get some sleep, and then just kept on doing that. And then when I went to law school, I worked full-time also. I was a clerk at the New Britain Superior Court. And then when I got out of law school, I went to work essentially with my father, which is where I work now at Fishbein Law Firm, and I have been there for, I think, 16 years now.
Did you learn anything valuable from working in retail?
Well, I guess you try and learn something valuable every day. That's an interesting question. Did you learn anything valuable? There's so many different things. You know, I learned that, did you learn anything valuable? I guess the answer to the question is yes. And then the follow-up question is, what did you learn? There's so many things. You know, you learn how, I mean, back then you had to count back change, you know? The bill was $7.35 and they gave you a $10 bill. How much change do you give them, you know? You learned not to be embarrassed when someone came through the line with underwear. I mean, I remember the first time somebody, you know, I was a cashier. Somebody came through the line with underwear, and I got all red in the face, and everybody was like pointing at me because I was this little nerdy kid who just couldn't come out of their box, and you know, you learn to deal with things like that. So yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about the different things you learn in retail or you learn at a job. So.
How old was it when you were discussing your current career? Did anyone inspire you to choose this
job? My father. When I went to college, I didn't have an intent of being a lawyer. I always looked up to my father, even though, like, during my parents' divorce, we didn't talk for, like, 10 years. I ran away to live with my mother. But my father always... You know, whenever I had a problem, I thought he had the easiest job in the world, because whenever I had a problem, I'd go to his office and he always had time for me. I mean, what other place can you go that, you know, they can just drop whatever they're doing, you know, to deal with your problem? So I like to work hard, and I do very well at my job. So, I have to say my father and, you know, for those reasons.
What is a typical day for you like?
Oh, every day is different. Every day is... I mean, I'm a litigator, so I'm in court just about every day. And I have a different kind of case every day. You know, Monday, I was defending a gentleman who was accused of punching his wife in the face... and then strangling her, and then slapping her across the face twice during the exchange. And I knew it wasn't true. And there's a divorce going on also. So it was our second day, actually. We had already done 5 hours of testimony. And they didn't bring the police to testify that this happened, although I knew the police got there. In fact, the wife testified that about 20 minutes after this alleged exchange, the police got there. And nobody was arrested, and I thought that was strange. So on Monday, I had the police officers come to court and testify as to what they actually saw. And they saw no evidence of what she said, getting there 20 minutes later. So, and I did another 3 hours of testimony that day, and ultimately the judge found that the woman was lying. And he vacated the previous orders. So, you know, that was Monday. Yesterday I was in New Haven court on a case having to do with people that are arguing over where a piece of land is and what usage they can make of it. Today I'll have a closing. Somebody's buying a piece of land, and I'm representing the seller with regard to that. I do very little closings. Tomorrow I'm back in court, and I'm in Meriden. That's why I like what I do. You know, some people, you know, I've worked at a factory before where every day is the same, basically. That's boring. I love what I do.
What is your favorite part about your job?
You know, I'm good at the rules, and I like to prepare for hearings. You know, next Tuesday, I'm in court in Middletown again, and I already know that the other lawyer hasn't followed the rules with something that he filed. So I'm going to argue to the judge that they didn't follow the rules and therefore I should win. It's those kinds of things, those nerdy things, you know, because not everybody reads that stuff. The judge is probably not even going to know the rule that I'm going to cite. That's, you know, it's a challenge and it's fun. And I enjoy helping people. You know, when I represent, you know, moms and dads in divorces, and a lot of times a mom will come to me and they're a shell of themselves. They can't look you in the eye. They can't speak. They, you know, with confidence. And then we go through the process and I boost up their self-esteem, and, you know, and I feel proud when I'm able to put them up there at the end, you know, and push them on with the rest of their life, knowing that I've been a positive portion of their life. That's enriching, and I enjoy. Those are probably the two most important things about my job.
Does being a state representative or a lawyer ever stress you out?
Yeah, but I guess you, over time, you get to learn. I mean, time management is very important. And it's an unusual, and I've always been this way, it's an unusual characteristic. When I try and tackle something, my brain automatically says, how long should it take to complete this task? And then my internal clock, like, monitors that, you know. So, you know, you have to, you got three things going on at once. How long will it take to get all of this stuff done? And then am I within my time limit or outside my time limit? That's when I get stressed, is when I'm outside my, if I have undercalculated the amount of time that it'll take to get something done. So then how do you deal with that? You know, deep breath, calm down. I'm always saying to myself, is this something within my control? The biggest impediment to progress in my mind is red lights. I hate red lights because I'm always going from point A to point B. And the one thing I can't control is the red light. I think about that every day. So,
do you have any other career path you would have rather followed? If so, why?
The rock star thing. I gotta say no. I love what I do. I'd love to be playing ice hockey. I'd love to be playing ice hockey. I do everything else to play ice hockey. Everything else. My wife knows that I will die on the ice. She's known that for, I've been married for 26 years. She's known that for a long time. My legs are killing me. I had a game Sunday night. We only had two subs, and I got a game tomorrow night. My legs are killing me.
Do you see yourself doing this career for the rest of your life?
Yeah, unless the Rangers call.
Do you have any specific goals that you would like to accomplish in your career?
I'd like to be a judge. I applied for that a few years ago, and I was rejected. Don't tell your dad. His dad works for me.
Yeah, he was here.
Yeah. A lot of people know this anyway. I was rejected on a political basis. Because in Connecticut, judges are selected, they're not voted upon, they're political appointees. So I applied, I was interviewed, and everyone in the room was of a different political party. you know, I as a tribute to my father, I think that would be a good thing.
Now we talk about this topic of success. So what is your proudest moment personally and professionally?
Proudest moment personally and professionally. Proudest moment personally and professionally. I got to tell you, I don't have a proud moment personally. I can't think of one. I really can't think of one. Professionally, you know, I've represented a few years ago in Meriden, there was a new mayor that was put into office, and he brought up certain things about their charter that he claimed that the town wasn't following. And a group of residents hired me to bring the issue to court. And the issue, basically the issue was whether or not the mayor or the town council was able to appoint certain people to boards and commissions, and to hire their lawyer, the town's attorney. And basically I proved that the town had been violating their own charter for about 20 years. There was five lawyers from a very large law firm in New Haven fighting me. And we went all the way to the Connecticut Supreme Court, which is the highest court in Connecticut, and I beat them all. That was a pretty big professional achievement. I've had similar cases like that where, you know, it's sort of like the David and Goliath thing. Because I'm from a small little firm, do just about everything myself, and you get these big behemoth, you know, law firms that, you know, well, we're just going to beat him into submission, and it doesn't work that way. So, you know, that's an example, and I've had quite a few of those.
What is some advice that you would give to anyone in any field trying to become successful?
Well, I'm very goal-oriented, so I guess once you set a path, and once you say that you want to do something or be something, if you... before you go to sleep at night, ask yourself, what did I do today to advance myself towards that goal? And you're able to answer that question satisfactorily. Not that you need to do a lot, but ultimately you will be successful and ultimately you will meet that goal. I mean, when I went back to school, that's sort of how I challenged. It was very, very difficult to work full-time and go to school full-time. But I wanted to do that to be successful. And, I think that's the key to success. Whatever you deem to be success, because that is subjective. What we all think is successful is probably different all the way around the room.
What is your definition of success?
Oh, geez. I don't consider myself to be successful. You know, that's like, I'm sort of like a humble person. You know, somebody said, are you successful? I'd probably say no. What is successful? Happiness is a component of success, I guess. I mean, some people think, you know, the actor who makes $15 million per movie, are they successful? I don't know. Are they wealthy? Perhaps. If their goal was to be wealthy but unhappy, is that success? I think it's a balance between all, you know, to be happy with yourself, happy with your surroundings, to live somewhat comfortably. Those are all examples of success, but I think, you know, I think that's, those are components. Because once again, I don't consider myself to be successful. So.
Would you redo anything in your past that might have made you more successful today?
I would have stuck with my guitar lessons when I was 8. I would have started skating when I was 3.
Okay, well, do we have any more questions for Mr. Fishbein?
Actually, I do. You said you've thought a lot about stoplights. Have you come up with a better solution yet?
We won't get into guns. Anyway.
I also have one. What's the strangest case you've ever done as a lawyer?
It is a good question. Strange is once again subjective. I've done some cases where nobody has thought that they would be successful. There's a legal concept that it's called a constructive trust. And basically, if I give Ethan $10 to go buy, I don't know, a bicycle, and the bicycle costs $100, but I give him 10 of the $100, so is it 10%? You know, but there's no writing. There's no, you know, that I own 10% of the bicycle, and then Ethan goes and sells it to somebody else and gets $200 for it. You know, basically our law says that I would not have a claim on that that interest, that $20 now, because I had a 10% buy-in. The concept of constructive trust allows one to sue. So where I run into that is where boyfriend-girlfriend, and girlfriend gives the boyfriend a little bit of money and he goes and buys a house, and then they break up and then he's still got the house. So under the concept of constructive trust, I'll go sue the boyfriend on behalf of the girlfriend and get an interest in the house. It's a very unusual situation, and I've done that, I don't know, 6 or 7 times. Everybody says, you know, you're not going to get anything out of that, and I have. I guess that's one example. I mean, in divorces, there's always wacky stuff, almost always. Mm. You know, most of which I can't even talk about here. But you know, when I first started practicing law, I used to do my own private investigation work because I didn't have a lot of cases. So I had a case where the woman claimed that the guy was working more than he claimed he was working. And I remember hiding in the bushes and taking pictures of him. And then, you know, he was running one of those hot dog trucks. And then we went to court and he said, oh, no, I just work at Staples. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, what about the hot dog truck? Oh, well, you know, I do that as a hobby. And, you know, well, you know, so how much do you make from the hobby? And he's like, well, like $3 a day. So then I had the pictures of the line of people, you know, at the hot dog truck. And then we're doing the calculation right there in front of the judge. And I'm like, well, if you're doing $3 a day, then you're charging those people a nickel each. You know, that can't be the truth. You know, which is fun, right?
Yeah.
That is fun stuff.
Getting shut down.
I had a lawyer on the stand once that I got him to admit that he had committed perjury, that he had lied under oath. He was actually going through a divorce. I was representing the wife. And one of the things that we did was we do is interrogatories. We submit written questions to the other side. And when you fill them out, you're supposed to swear to them under oath. So we came to court, and the judge had ordered that he had to do this, swear to them under oath before somebody who was a notary, somebody who takes an oath. And I noticed on there that the date was a Sunday. And I'm thinking, this guy's too lazy to find a notary on a Sunday, so something's up here. So I had him on the stand because he was giving me lawyer answers with regard to his thing that just, you know, and he made me so mad. So I finally said to him, well, you know, where did you go to get your, you know, to do your oath? And he said, a bank. I was like, a bank, okay. Well, the only bank that's open on a Sunday is TD Bank. Okay. So what bank?
Bank of America. I was like, oh, shit, I got him. And so then I kept thinking, well, what Bank of America? You know, well, the one in Brantford. I said, well, you know, what are their hours? You know, what time did you get there? You know, and he's going deeper and deeper down the hole, and I know I got him. And he finally stopped answering my questions, and he said, okay, just ask me what you want to ask me. I said, did you sign somebody else's name to these interrogatory responses? And he said yes. And so then the judge took a break. She ordered a transcript. She sent it to the grievance committee. You know, fun stuff, right? Everybody's like patting me on the back. And, you know, I mean, I felt really bad because as a lawyer, you know, it was really that a lawyer stoops to that level. I just felt bad for the profession. You know, good for my, you know, my creds. But anyway, so.
Oh, I have a question. So as a state representative, are you both up on the prosecution side and the defense side?
Well, as a state representative, that really doesn't come into play. Yeah, we've totally stayed away from that, huh?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's like a part-time sort of situation. As a state representative, part of my job, perhaps, is to come up with those rules that lawyers and judges are supposed to use in the courtroom. That is, you know, we approve statutes, and lawyers and judges go by the statutes. As a private lawyer, though, in a criminal matter, I could only defend. Prosecutors are hired by the state, and that is generally all they do today. My father was a part-time prosecutor for about 20 years, so he had a private office, and then a couple of days a week, he acted as a prosecutor. In a civil case, which is anything other than criminal, I represent plaintiffs, which are people that are bringing actions, as well as defendants, which are people that are defending actions. I prefer to do defense work, just so that you know, because I find it much easier to say no than to try to get something for somebody. So.
Earlier you mentioned that you like to read. What was the most valuable lesson you ever learned in the book? Because I know a lot of books have like lessons in there.
I thought the question was going to be, what was the most important book you've ever read? I mean, there's so many different... I've read all the Harry Potter books, right? You know, so... But what is the best lesson that you learned? I mean, because I alternate fiction and nonfiction. There's so many different things. I mean, you know, Glenn Beck wrote a great book a few years ago, Dreamers and Deceivers. In every chapter, it alternated with somebody who's a dreamer or a deceiver. And I guess from the dreamers, it's never give up. Always fight for what you believe to be... Always fight for what you believe to be right. That's probably one of the most important things. But most important book is Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand, which is about this thick. Yeah. Yeah. But it's an absolutely fantastic book. Have you ever read it?
I have not. Check it out. So we're reading comic books.
It's an interesting. It's about a woman, Dagny Taggart, whose family owns a railroad, and how the government is controlling the railroad industry, the steel industry, where they make the rails. And you know, it's about entrepreneurs and risk takers in business and how they just finally say, we're not dealing with this. We're going to go and start our own thing. And there's romance in the book. I mean, it was written in 1955 by a woman who came here from Russia, but it's a very important book. Anyway. We're not going to do this all day.
What position do you play in hockey?
Right wing, and then usually when we're up, I move back to defense.
Yeah, we've got a hockey fan over here. I don't know if he's in the same team, but... Are you a Pittsburgh fan?
You're a Bruins fan. No, okay.
Dallas.
What?
Dallas.
Dallas. How'd you become a Dallas fan?
Yes, the Dallas Cowboys are pretty
good. Tyler Seguin. I like the Bruins, but he got traded to Dallas, and he's my favorite player.
So last night I was watching something, and you know Mike Modano. You know Mike Modano, right? You know how many games he's played? 1,499. But it's a lot, right? But they benched him for the last three games of the season, so he couldn't get 1,500. Is that ridiculous or what?
Yeah.
Yeah? Right? I mean, I never really liked Dallas. My wife's from Texas. Her whole family's in Texas. But I never liked the Stars. So, I mean, the Rangers, I got 94 was just incredible. It's, you know, their theme that year was Right Now, the song by Van Halen, which some of you must have heard, which basically, you know, don't wait, get it done now. So when they won the cup, I went back to school.
Cool. Any other questions?
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Fishbein, for coming to speak with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. And I have a gift for you. We go off camera.
All right. Okay, yeah.
And thank you to our listeners for, listening to our wonderful podcast.